What up? It's the Kid Polo Pull coming back to you guys once again with the latest episode of the Man Stash Minute, and we are at the halfway point of the Black History Month series, which we have been doing thus far on the Man Stash Minute. We have highlighted a plethora of prominent Black figures within our history to inspire change, motivation, and insight to the lives and legacies of these great people, which are you, the listener. I hope that within these great stories that you, the listener, have given insight to your ancestors, lineage, and your very own purpose in this plane. Introducing this highlighted figure, he was born into slavery, put himself through school, and became a teacher after the Civil War. In 1881, he founded the Tuskegee Normal and Industrial Institute in Alabama, which is now called Tuskegee University, which grew immensely and focused on training African Americans in agricultural pursuits. A political advisor and writer, he also clashed with intellectual W.E.B. Du Bois over the best avenues for racial uplift. And listeners, this is the story of the astounding life of Booker T. Washington. So please stay tuned and enjoy the Man Stash Minute.
This is the Man Stash Minute.
What up? And we're back on the Man Stash Minute. And today we're highlighting the beautiful life and legacy of Booker T. Washington. Born to an enslaved person on April 5, 1856, Washington's life had little promise early on. In Franklin County, Virginia, as in most states prior to the Civil War, the child of an enslaved person also became enslaved. Washington's mother, Jane, who worked as a cook for a plantation owner by the name of James Burroughs. His father was an unknown white man, most likely from a nearby plantation. Washington and his mother lived in a one-room log cabin with a large fireplace, which also served as the plantation's kitchen. At an early age, Washington went to work carrying sacks of grain to the plantation's mill. Toting 100-pound sacks was extremely hard for a small boy, and he was beaten on occasion for not performing his duties satisfactorily. Washington's first exposure to education was from the outside of a schoolhouse near the plantation. Looking inside, he saw children his age sitting at desks and reading books. He wanted to do what those children were doing, but he was enslaved, and it was illegal to teach enslaved people to read and write. After the Civil War, Washington and his mother moved to Malden, West Virginia, where she married Freeman Washington Ferguson. The family was extremely poor, and 9-year-old Washington went to work in the nearby salt furnaces with his stepfather instead of going to school. Washington's mother noticed his interest in learning and got him a book from which he learned the alphabet and how to read and write basic words. Because he was still working, he got up nearly every morning at 4 a.m. to practice and study. About this time, Washington took the first name of his stepfather as his last name, Washington. In 1866, Washington got a job as a houseboy for Viola Ruffner, the wife of a coal mine owner named Louis Ruffner. Mrs. Ruffner was known for being very strict with her servants, especially boys, but she saw something in Washington, his maturity, intelligence, and integrity, and soon she warmed up to him. Over the 2 years that he worked for, she understood his desire for an education and allowed him to go to school for an hour a day during the winter months. In 1872, Washington left home and walked 500 miles to Hampton Normal Agricultural Institute in Virginia. Along the way, he took odd jobs to support himself. He convinced administrators to let him attend the school and took a job as a janitor to help pay for his tuition. The school's founder and headmaster, General Samuel C. Armstrong, soon discovered the hard-working Washington and offered him a scholarship sponsored by a white man. Armstrong had been a commander of a Union African-American regiment during the Civil War and was a strong supporter of providing newly freed enslaved people with a practical education. Armstrong became Washington's mentor, strengthening his values of hard work and a strong moral character. Washington graduated from Hampton in 1875 with high marks. For a time, he taught at his old grade school in Malden, Virginia, and attended Wayland Seminary in Washington, D.C. in 1879. He was then chosen to speak at Hampton's graduation ceremonies, where afterward General Armstrong offered Washington a job teaching at Hampton. In 1881, the Alabama legislature approved $2,000 for a colored school, the Tuskegee Normal and Industrial Institute, which is now known as Tuskegee University. General Armstrong was asked to recommend a white man to run the school, but instead he recommended Washington. Clashes were first held in an old church while Washington traveled all over the countryside promoting the school and raising money. He reassured white people that nothing in the Tuskegee program would threaten white supremacy or pose any economic competition to white people. Under Washington's leadership, Tuskegee became a leading school in the country. At his death, it had more than 100 well-equipped buildings, 1,500 students, a 200-member faculty teaching 38 trades and professions, and a nearly $2 billion endowment. Washington put much of himself into the school's curriculum, stressing the virtues of patience, enterprise, and thrift. He taught that economic success for African Americans would take time, and that subordination to white people was a necessary evil until African Americans could prove they were worthy of full economic and political rights. He believed that if African Americans worked hard and obtained financial independence and cultural advancement, they would eventually win acceptance and respect from the white community. In 1895, Washington publicly put forth his philosophy on race relations in a speech at the Cotton States and International Exposition in Atlanta, Georgia, known as the Atlanta Compromise. In his speech, Washington stated that African Americans should accept disenfranchisement and social segregation as long as white people allow economic progress, educational opportunity, and justice within the courts. This started a firestorm in the parts of the African American community, especially within the North. Activists like W.E.B. Du Bois, who was working as a professor at Atlanta University at that time, deplored Washington's conciliatory philosophy and his belief that African Americans were only suited for vocational training. Du Bois criticized Washington for not demanding equality for African Americans as granted by the 14th Amendment, and subsequently became an advocate for full and equal rights in every realm of a person's life. Through Washington, had done so much to help advance many African Americans, there was some truth in the criticism. During Washington's rise as a national spokesman for African Americans, they were systematically excluded from the vote and political participation through black codes and Jim Crow laws as rigid patterns of segregation and discrimination became institutionalized throughout the South and much of the country. In 1901, President Theodore Roosevelt invited Washington to the White House, making him the first African American to be honored. But the fact that Roosevelt asked Washington to dine with him and affirm the two were equal was unprecedented and controversial. It caused a ferocious uproar among white people. Both President Roosevelt and his successor, President William Howard Taft, used Washington as an advisor on racial matters, partly because he accepted racial subservience. His White House visit and the publication of his autobiography, Up from Slavery, brought him both acclaim and indignation from many Americans. While some African Americans look upon Washington as a hero, like others, like Du Bois, saw him as a traitor, many Southern white people, including some prominent members of Congress, saw Washington's success as an affront and called for action to put African Americans, quote, in their place. Booker T. Washington was a complex individual who lived during a precarious time in advancing racial equality. On one hand, he was openly supportive of African Americans taking a back seat to white people, while on the other hand, he secretly financed several court cases challenging segregation. By 1913, Washington had lost much of his influence. The newly inaugurated Wilson administration was cool to the idea of racial integration and African-American equality. Washington remained the head of Tuskegee Institute until his untimely death on November 14, 1915, at the age of 59, due to congestive heart failure. And ladies and gentlemen, this is the life and legacy of Booker T. Washington. regardless of his accolades, accomplishments, one has to discern to push the movement in silence. The world has already silenced us. Society has already shamed us. But we as a collective or as an individual are here for a reason other than ourselves. Push the agenda, not the anger. Seek truth without the turmoil. Embrace genuine love within yourself despite the temptation of lust. And most importantly, acquire the knowledge of self to inspire the world to do so. And watch the awe of your transformation manifest through your life and legacy while enjoying the journey. I hope that you enjoyed this segment and episode of the Mustache Minute. I am your host, and this is Polo Paul signing out. Bye.
I love you, Daddy.